Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
For every $100 in wealth held by a white household,
yeah,
every black household would have $15.
Yeah.
Systemic racism is real.
Sometimes it seems like people appreciate you at first.
Absolutely.
It's shiny and new. They appreciate you.
Talk about it.
And then it changes. What we do matters.
It does.
You can change your yes can change history for someone else. We didn't break this. It's not our fault. But it is our collective responsibility to be a part of the solution.
Welcome to the table. Well, yeah. Welcome to the table. Build wealth. Life. Welcome to the table.
Brown faces and white spaces is what we're going to be talking about today. Man, New York Times bestseller of the amazing book, Be the Bridge, that I believe every black person and white person in America has had the opportunity to read. Latasha Morrison is in the building today to really educate us and educate us from our history, to let us know why we are where we are today and how we can change where we're going tomorrow. This is a conversation that I have been waiting for. I've been asking my sister to come on the show, and between her schedule and my schedule, we haven't been able to nail it down. But today she's in the building to talk about her new book, Brown Faces, White Faces, Confronting Systemic Racism to Bringing Healing and Restoration. The book is on sale right now. And I wanted to start off with this. I've never started off with a show promoting a book, but I believe that systemic racism is real. And racism is still prevalent in our days and times. It just looks a little bit different sometimes, and we got to be able to see that. And I also believe that sometimes white people are not educated to understand where we've come from. And watch this, black people, we're not educated to even understand where we come from. So today's show is going to be a crucial one. So I really want y'all to sit down, get dialed in. If you listen to this on podcast, turn it up just a little bit more. If you're watching this on your phone or on your TV, thank you so much. But for the next 35 minutes, focus, dial in, rewind again, and share today's show. Before we get to my dear sister, two quick things. Don't forget that nearly 70% of you all are just dating me. Listen, man, I'm a single man. I want you to marry me. Okay, I want you to hit that subscribe button and be a part of this amazing community that we're building called the E3 community, where we are expanding in the areas of abundance, wellness, and freedom. And so these are the kind of conversations that are impacting us. When we talk about racism, that impacts our money, that impacts our wealth. When we're talking about redlining, that impacts our wealth and our money. And so we're always going to be bringing good information that's going to help you really get to the next level of your abundance, wellness, and freedom. So hit that subscribe button. And number two, I want to thank today's sponsor of show, Bethel Tech, my good friends that are on a mission to help African Americans get into the tech industry, because the number one rising industry that's creating net worth millionaires is the tech industry. And they have a quick message for you. Check it out. Let's dive into something exciting. Bethel Tech's micro-credential program. Just 15 weeks and you're on your way to mastering in-demand tech skills, setting you apart in today's competitive job market. And the best part, it's all online, 100% online and fitting perfectly into your busy life. Bethel Tech isn't just about tech skills. It's about growing your character through spiritual mentorship and faith groups, shaping you into a Christian leader in the tech world. You'll learn from industry experts geared towards your success. What about landing your dream job? Bethel Tech's graduates are making waves at companies like Salesforce and Dell. And with a price tag of only $5,000, it's an investment in your future that's both affordable and valuable. Are you ready to start? With multiple start dates, there's never been a better time. Visit anthonyoneal.com/Bethel. Again, that is anthonyoneal.com/Bethel. And step into your tech career with confidence and character. So listen, let's get to it. My sister's in the building. I'm turning this way because, Latasha, I have been looking for you to come on my show. First off, welcome to the table.
I am so glad to be here.
For the first time.
I know.
Wow, and I just, we've known of each other, but we just met each other, I would say, what, 6 months ago, I want to say?
Yeah, about 6 months ago.
About 6 months ago. Man, we had dinner, and I was like, Latasha, yes, I need you on my show. And man, I want to go back to your beginning because I think the world got to know you from your amazing book, Be the Bridge.
Right.
And you've been the black face that's really trying to be the bridge between black people and white people. Yeah. And I resonate with that because for about 7 years of my life, I tried to do that too. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult.
Yeah.
To be the black man in a predominantly white culture.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to resonate with both cultures,
right.
To be honest with you.
Right, right.
You know? And I failed in certain areas. I failed myself in certain areas. I failed the white culture in certain areas. I failed the black culture in certain areas. But God has given you the anointing mm-hmm. to be that bridge.
Yeah.
Where did this start for you? Like, who is Latasha Morrison and why do you have this passion for this message and journey that you're on?
Yeah, I think one of it started because we grew up in the same hometown.
Okay.
We didn't know each other, but Fayetteville.
Okay.
With Fayetteville being a military town, mm-hmm. my life has been very diverse, you
okay.
know?
True.
The school I went to, you know, Southview.
I went to Southview.
I know.
I went to Southview. Oh my goodness. Let's go. Tigers all day.
I know. It's so funny. And this is just stuff that we didn't know.
No.
And but because of that, I was exposed. Now I'm like several years ahead of you, in that. And so we kind of set the pace. And I do remember, like, if you were in school mm-hmm. and there was a gospel choir, I started that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, me and my best friend started the gospel choir when we were I'm gonna date myself. It was like 1990, 1991.
Wow.
Yeah, and we started that because I was trying to get Black History Month acknowledged at Southview.
Wow.
And they were like, I was in that leadership development program. I was in like a class and I mentioned it because I went to a program at my grandmother's church, AME Zion Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why don't we learn this at school?
Mm-hmm.
And so me just being naive, in the leadership class, we're supposed to bring stuff to the table.
Facts.
I brought it to the table and people looked at me like,
you know what's so funny is, how can you tell me all this at dinner? You just went to an AME Zion church. I was ordained at Simon Temple AME Zion Church.
Yeah.
Off of Fort Bragg Road.
Okay.
So this is great.
I went with my grandmother. My grandmother was a part of a church, Rock Spring. And
I know all about Rock Spring.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
And Come on.
And that, you know, so I have a lot of family on the Morrison side that's like AME Zion pastors and everything. And so I went in that class and I remember mentioning it and people looked. And these are like friends that I was in band with and all these things. And I remember this one guy said, oh, what are we going to have now? Italian History Month?
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like,
wow.
What? And it was that we had a big argument in the class about that. And I talk a little bit about it in the first book. But what came out of that is that we weren't going to do Black History Month. I had to compromise and call it Brotherhood Month. And so they called it Brotherhood Month, Black History Month, but they called it Brotherhood Month because we had to be inclusive. But this taught me something. We were able to create the program we wanted. So it was basically Black History Month.
Yeah.
But I did appreciate elevating, you know, being from Fayetteville, being from North Carolina,
yeah,
we have a lot of Lumbee natives.
Yes.
And so I was able to elevate that story, yeah, you know, and bring people in and work with people to kind of elevate that story. And so that let me know that it's just not really a Black white binary,
yeah, yeah,
but there are other marginalized suppressed groups. And so that helped as far as that bridge building.
Okay.
But that really helped me, you know, because I when I left college, I was at a predominantly African-American church.
Okay.
And I love going into spaces. Like, I feel comfortable in different spaces.
That's good.
But I like to bring my full self in those
yes,
spaces.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't want to change who I am to
yes,
be in those spaces.
Yes.
And sometimes it seems like people appreciate you at first.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely
shiny and new.
Talk
they appreciate
about it.
You.
Talk about it.
And then it changes.
Yes, ma'am.
Because if you make the majority group feel like white people feel uncomfortable,
mm-hmm,
then it changes. Or if you start challenging different
yes,
things, they're saying at first they say they want it.
Right.
But then they really don't want
you,
it.
You the know? Expert in this space. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying right now.
So, yes,
talk to me.
So that is my story. And it's not just my story. Everybody that's probably listening, like, oh my God, that happened to me. They were my friends at first, and now they're not. Like, yeah, they liked me at first, and then I became a threat, you know.
Oh, Latasha.
And so that is so many of our stories.
Yes.
And so I really want to help my community. And so what I like to do is create books and materials and resources that's really going to help us and really tell the historical context. So with Be the Bridge, I was in a predominantly white church in Austin, Texas. I moved to Texas.
Okay.
And I had people just saying crazy things to me.
Wow.
And I was just like, okay, now I am naturally a bridge builder. Without Be the Bridge,
yes,
Latasha Morrison is a change agent.
Yes.
I'm a leader,
yes,
and I'm a bridge builder.
Yes.
That's who I've always been.
Yes.
Anybody listening, they would not say anything different. That is who I am.
Change agent.
Leader.
And a bridge builder.
You know, okay. So without Be the Bridge formed because of this is a part of who I am.
Yes, ma'am.
You know?
Yes, ma'am.
And I didn't have to form to make Be the Bridge. And
yes,
so that makes it easier. I'm just kind of, it's like God, like you said, gifted me and anointed me for this work.
Yes.
And I used to always say that to my team when I was at the predominantly African American church. I said, I feel like we're a bridge. Like, yeah, we would go in places because we would know different types of music. We didn't know just gospel music, but we knew the CCM, you
yes
know. If you look at my playlist right now, I got all types of music on my phone. And so that was just always who we were. So I thought that the same thing was true, yeah, in the Christian space, that because we were inclusive and wanting to know and cross those barriers, I thought it was the same way
mm
within the white church.
Mm.
And I was surprised mm that, you know, it wasn't, you
yeah
know. A lot of people were open, and I had people saying things, and I'm like, hey, if we're going to be in community, you know, if we're going to be in community, we need to have some hard conversations.
Yes.
And I think Trayvon Martin had just been murdered. That was
right
a catalytic moment for me. So
okay,
I've been doing this work. You can trace these threads back, you know, to elementary school
wow
for me. I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
But it was like that pattern was forming,
yes,
you know, then. But I think what really sent me over was when Trayvon Martin was murdered and some of the conversations. At that point, I was at a predominantly white church.
Wow.
But I still had my Black friends, and we were all talking about it.
Yes.
When I went into my white church space, they never
silent.
Never said a mumbling word. Like, it was two different worlds.
And I got to ask this question because when Trayvon Martin, for you, you're in a predominantly white
yeah
world.
Mm-hmm.
George Floyd, for me, I'm in predominantly white world.
Okay.
So I'm resonating with you
yeah
right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm curious for you when you went to church.
Yeah.
Where that God made that white person and that Black boy.
Uh-huh.
How do you feel? if you mind me asking, Ron, what age were you around that time? Young 20s, 30s?
Yeah, it was in 2012. It was in 2012 when he was murdered.
Yep.
And then I just moved I was moving to Austin.
Okay.
And so when I moved, so the verdict didn't come out until I was in Austin. So it happened in Atlanta.
Yep.
And the verdict came out. And I just remember looking for someone to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, because in Austin at that time, I can go a week and not see another
black person. American.
It was tough, but I had to make community where I was. And so I'm like, if we believe the Bible and we say we're going to suffer with those who suffer, rejoice with those that rejoice, if we're talking about love your neighbor as yourself, it's not talking about just the neighbor that look like you.
Come on now.
And so I'm like, I'm going to hold you to this word.
Yeah.
And so I did have, you know, God always provides those safe people, you know, those people of peace. And I had a friend that was a person of peace that I could talk to. And then I had friends that they didn't understand because they had never been exposed.
Absolutely.
And so that's a big difference where they would change, or they would, if you corrected them, they were grateful for it.
Yes.
And they wanted to be exposed, but never saw that, hey, this is just a one-dimensional world that I'm living in.
Yes.
And so it's like we don't exist in that framework. And so I understood when I would talk to people when I was younger and they, you know, you're talking about civil rights movement and someone would say, well, I never knew that this was all going on. I just never knew.
Mm.
And I was just like, well, how all these people never knew?
Mm.
And we were suffering and, you know, and all these things that were happening. So you didn't see that black people couldn't go through that door. You didn't see when you went to the movies that, you know, black people couldn't go to the movies, or they had to sit up top, or they couldn't eat where you would eat.
Facts.
Like, you didn't see. But to the world of majority, it's like you become invisible.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so challenging that, and what people are missing is a historical context.
Yes, ma'am.
And that has helped out, you know, so much with my friends, giving them like, why, like most people don't even realize that the reason why the AME Zion Church exists, the reason why the Missionary Baptist Church exists,
talk to them,
is because we could not worship in white spaces. Because this is the thing, our community, black people, we never wanted vengeance.
Never.
Only thing we've ever wanted was equality and equity.
That's it.
That's it. And that still it. To this day.
Yeah, we're not asking
it.
For better.
We're like, leave us alone.
Right.
Just give us equality.
Yes.
Give us equity. I talk about this in the book, like even with Brown versus the Board of Education.
Yes.
It wasn't that we wanted to come to your schools. When you look at that case,
mm-hmm.
it was that we wanted equality and equity. We
That's
wanted
it.
the same books you have. We want
them.
The same computers you have?
Yes.
We want them. We want the same opportunity. We want our teachers to be trained. And because we have these lens of inferior, that we are inferior, it was interpreted that, okay, your schools are inferior, your teachers are inferior. So when you look at that history of that, the schools that were closed were the African-American schools. Majority of the schools were closed were African-American schools. And at that time, that was the profession we could go in was teaching.
Yes.
Like, you know, Fayetteville State was a teaching school. Like,
yes.
you know, we had 45% of our teachers were let go. And we've been in a deficit of brown teachers since then. And the same thing with our medical schools, you know. Five of our medical schools were closed down. We've been in a deficit of doctors since then. So it's important for us to know the historical context when it comes, when we're looking at today and why we are lacking, why is there a wealth gap, you know, why we don't have a lot of doctors, why we are in a deficit as it relates to African-American teachers.
Yes.
And, you know, and statistics show that just having one black teacher from a school,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really increases that brown child's chance of graduating.
Just seeing one,
because you know what? You can be what you see.
Absolutely.
You know, and so when you see it, and I used to hear this because I grew up in the suburbs being in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
But I saw people graduate. You
right.
know, I had a different experience. But when I moved to Atlanta, I met kids who really had never been out of their city.
Mm-hmm.
I met a young boy but never, no one in his family had graduated high school. So that is the reality for some people. So I have to realize that even just how we talk about as a white person that your experience is not universal, as a black person, our experiences are not universal. Growing up in Fayetteville, North Carolina is totally different from growing up in East Orange, New Jersey. You know?
That is facts.
Yes, yes. And so that those are the things that, you know, those are the things that like kind of formed me and shaped me. And I wanted to write Be the Bridge because I wanted to explain the process of reconciliation. I wanted people to know what reconciliation means and the cost of it, because reconciliation is about repair. It's about restoration. And we love to talk. We, you know, we like, we feel like reconciliation is just like, oh, you repent and forgive and then that's it.
Right. No.
No, that's no, not no. it.
Yeah.
And so I, in Be the Bridge, the first book, that's what I did. I explained that,
yes,
you know,
did.
Because I was in that white church environment having these conversations
yes.
with people who wanted to have them.
Yes.
And who were listening. They gave me the gift of listening
yes.
and learning
yes.
and lamenting.
Yes.
Those are the things. And then with the next book, I looked at the gaps because I started writing that book in 2020. And you know what happened in 2020?
Absolutely.
George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, the racial no reckoning. That's what I like to call it. Everybody say that was the year of racial reckoning. But
right.
when we look at what it has produced, it brought awareness.
It sure enough did.
And some acknowledgement.
Yes.
But it really stopped there. It didn't bring the collective lament.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
That leads to justice and change,
yes.
you know?
Yeah.
And so it was very performative.
Yes.
You know? And that's
yes.
what we're dealing with, because we look at now, we have less rights now than we did then, because of the rollback of yeah. affirmative action.
Oh my gosh, you talking right now.
And affirmative action was a part of repair. So we have to know our history.
Yes.
We have to know why affirmative action came into play.
Yeah.
And that was because it was a way of repairing the centuries of discrimination
yes.
and marginalization of groups of people. But not only did we benefit, we marched.
Right.
But our Native brothers
sure did,
you know, benefited.
Yeah,
they changed the, you know, you have the Immigration Act of 1968. So that changed. So the quotas,
right,
the racist quotas that we had that restricted people from other countries besides European countries from coming in, that changed. So a lot of our Asian American brothers who are listening to this, they can probably trace their grandparents and their parents coming over in the 60s. Yeah. I always say, thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
That was because of the work of the civil rights movement
yes.
During that time. And so the Fair Housing Act.
Oh,
you know,
I don't want to go there right now.
Yeah,
because I mean that's
yeah.
that's impacting our wealth.
Yeah, that's it, and listen, if it wasn't for the Fair Housing Act, that's saying that redlining is illegal.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that we cannot discriminate based on race when yeah. it comes to the housing market. Now this was passed in the 60s.
Yes.
So you have 1968, the Fair Housing Act, and so you think about that. You have it, when we talk about the white wealth gap, there is a like 300 year head start.
Listen, I want you to say right there because
yeah.
I literally just looked it up just to make sure my numbers were right. And we talking about the wealth gap.
Yeah.
And you said it's 300 year head start. Right?
Yeah, I said, yeah, 300. If we're counting slavery and Jim Crow.
Slavery and Jim Crow. So white people had a 300 year head start. For every $100 in wealth held by a white household,
yeah.
every black household would have $15.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is impactful because of that head start.
Yeah.
Which goes back to what you said before. We just want to be equal and have the same opportunities as you.
Yeah.
To build wealth for our families.
Yeah. Yeah. We want the same thing. And so, but we have to look at, like, even with that, So a lot of us will look at, like, most of our parents probably bought in the 60s when that fair housing act came about. So that means that you can live in other neighborhoods that you wanted to live in. And then you have to look at what happened to our neighborhoods. Because those who had the ability to move out moved out and took the resources. And so you have that on top of, we can't get into a whole history lesson. But there's even a lot of policies when you talk about the Nixon and the Reaganomics, how it impacted our neighborhoods. But then you go into, okay, my grandparents have a house in Savoy Heights. And so Savoy Heights was a red line community.
Sure was.
And so in 2021, when I looked at what my grandparents' house was worth, it was like $66,000.
It's worth more now, though, right?
Yeah, it's worth more now because they started building $300,000 homes in the back. But I'm just saying, like, what they paid for their house in that neighborhood, like, it was devalued. Redlining is a devaluation where the government said that because you're a black body, where you live, the space that you take up is less valuable. And so, in, you know, so they... So this was legal. So you had some, there's a book called The Color of Law that'll tell you all about it. But black areas were marked as red. Areas that was in between transition, they were yellow. And then areas that were fully white were green. And so this is when you start having white flight, you know, when we can move into spaces. We weren't wanted there, and so they were saying, like, if you get two or three in the neighborhood, you start having white flight, and you that's when you see the really people leaving the cities and moving to the suburbs and everything. And so you have all of these different challenges. So even with the policy, there's quicksand, there's hurdles that you have to go through. But what did we build on top of the housing market? What did we build on top of these redlined, devalued communities? We built the school system.
Sure did.
And so it's, and 30% of your property taxes go to your school.
Sure do.
So if your house is devalued,
so is the school.
And so this is when we talk about systemic racism. This is systemic. It's in our DNA. It's baked into the DNA. So what happens is when these laws were changed, so you can have a policy to say, and this is illegal. But if you don't go back and repair, if you don't go back and say, you know what, this was wrong what we did. It's not just, it's not okay just to say this was wrong. This was wrong what we did.
And we need
now
to go
we
back
have
and fix
to
it.
Go back and fix it.
Yes.
We have to reevaluate these houses.
Yes.
We have to make sure that every school has an equal opportunity.
Yes.
So if this if this community was devalued, you know, then those schools need to get an additional 30% from somewhere. You know, like making it equitable, but we've never done that as a country.
Do you think the country will do that eventually?
You know what? It depends on if first of all, we have to know what's broken.
Okay.
So it's important for people who are in power to know what's broken. But we have to have people in power that will do justice, that would render justice, that understand what it means to make it right. And so those are the type of people, the mindsets that we have to elect. Because if we're electing, because it, the bottom line when we start talking about white supremacy and racism, like, it's not, the bottom line is not hate. The bottom line is indifference. And so we have to really make sure that we are putting people in place that sees us. And that sees that we belong in all of these different places. And so I don't feel like anything is impossible. I am a hopeful person.
I got you.
You know?
I got you.
Now, do I believe that I'll see it on my watch? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I'm not going to do everything in my power.
Yeah.
My little part.
Yeah.
You're doing your part, Anthony. Yeah. You're educating.
Yes, ma'am.
So you're educating to the point where, hey, there's some hurdles, there's some landmines, there's some quicksand, but I'm going to show you how to get over those landmines and quicksand.
Absolutely.
So we have always done that. We have always picked ourselves up by the bootstrap.
Yes, ma'am.
We are freaking miracles. You hear me?
We are.
I am a descendant of someone that survived the Atlantic slave trade.
Come on now.
I can trace my history back.
Yes.
And so if we think about that, we are miracles.
Yes.
And the things that we've survived, I'm telling you right now, and that is a lot of the fear.
Yeah.
Is this resilience in this community.
Oh, man.
You know, because we have made something from nothing all the time. You know, we took our sorrow and our pain.
Yes.
And we created blues music.
Man, we took our sorrow and our pain, we created gospel music.
And gospel.
I had a, I had a white friend. He didn't know what he was asking me. And I just laughed, Latasha. Uh-huh. He said, why is all the black gospel songs always repeating the name Jesus? And every song I hear, they repeat the same thing over and over and over. And I said, well, man, when you're slaves, you got to repeat the name of Jesus just to live.
Yeah.
I said, so I think, man, that question should be asked differently, which I understand you didn't know, but I'm like, we took our pain.
Yeah.
We took our sorrow. We took our struggles. We took some of our fears, and we had to turn that into music to keep us moving forward, to keep us waking up, to keep us praising God. We had to remind ourselves of the true God, because sometimes y'all was preaching the wrong God.
Yes.
And so we had to flip it to remind us of that.
Yeah.
And then he said, but you don't. I was like, brother, let's get in here and go to work, man.
Yeah, like people see, like, hey, there are anomalies, you know, there are people, outliers, there's always outliers, but it doesn't tell the story of the whole community.
Doesn't.
And so, but people like to look at certain people and say, well, if they did it, you know, but like I said, we're not a monolith.
We're not.
And, you know, and your story is not my story, just like my story is not someone's story that's listening.
Yes, ma'am.
And and this is the thing, we've never had a victim mentality. So don't let people tell you that.
Ooh.
I hear that a lot where people say, well, when are we going to stop talking about the past and complaining and just do? We just got to go do.
Yeah.
Like, we've always had agency.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When, you know, we always, there was always resistance.
Yes.
Do you know how many slave revolts that there were?
No, I don't know that.
I mean, I don't know the exact number, but what I'm saying is sometimes they will say that there wasn't any, but there was several slave revolts.
Absolutely.
And even when we didn't have, we created, we produced. Like, the fact why people were taken from West Africa, like, it was because of the horticulture, like, the things that we knew to do, and because of our brilliance, you know, and that's the narrative that we have to the change is that we were always brilliant, you know, and we brought that brilliance here with us, and this country is better because we're here, you know, and you know, and our white brothers and sisters, what I've seen is when you give historical context, when those who have an open heart and those who want to acknowledge, I've seen transformation. Like, 86% of Be the Bridge is white people.
Yes, it is.
I was just on a donor's call last night.
Yeah.
And majority of those people
are white.
Were white people.
Yeah.
And several white men.
Yeah.
That are listening. So I don't want you guys to be discouraged and thinking that nobody is hearing, that nobody's listening, because just like we're not a monolith, white people are not a monolith.
Facts.
You know?
Facts.
And so there are people who are leaning into this conversation. We do trainings all the time. And someone will say, why didn't I know this?
Wow.
Because it gives them context.
Yes, ma'am.
Like, you know, like redline it, I didn't know.
What's going on, family? Have you ever worried about the incredible impact of influential figures like Megan Thee Stallion or the profound cultural moments like the woman behind the Montgomery bus boycott? These stories are more than just headlines. They are powerful narratives that shape our history and inspire our future. You see, for me, these stories represent the strength, the resilience, and the creativity of the Black community. They remind us of our ability to overcome adversity and create world-shifting change. I believe my audience will find these stories both interesting and inspiring because they resonate with our shared experiences and aspirations. If you're interested in hearing more stories like this, you have to check out my friends at NPR Podcasts. NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths collections, you'll hear stories of joy and resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting change out of struggle. Every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Michelle Obama, to the woman behind the Montgomery bus boycott. There's no limit to the range of NPR. Listen right now to these amazing Black stories, Black truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
About that.
Yes.
I didn't know that your grandmother couldn't vote until she was in her 30s.
Wow.
It just depends. If you were in the South, you didn't vote. Now, people in the North, they were voting for a while.
You know, Latasha,
I know we could sit here forever.
She is the author of this new book, Brown Faces, White Spaces. It is currently on sale. This is a book that you have to get. I don't care if you're Black. I don't care if you're white. I don't care if you're Hispanic. We need to understand this information, and I'm excited to get into it, to read it, because Be the Bridge was amazing. And Latasha, this is going to be in the show notes, okay? We're going to link this in the show notes. But Latasha, I first heard of you, from a good friend, John Gray, years ago.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, Latasha Morrison, Be the Bridge. I think you did something with him. Uh-huh. And then about a year later, I worked for Ramsey Solutions.
Okay.
And they started Be the Bridge, devotional, your work, whatever it is.
The discussion guide.
And I would say 90% of the people who showed up were white.
Yeah.
Well, now 95% of the people who work at Ramsey Solutions are white, which is totally cool. But it pleased my heart to see that a white organization brought in your discussion group to have that conversation. And it was led by a Black woman going through your discussion group. And so I want you to know, thank you for that. Because what you don't know is I sung on a gospel choir at Southview.
Oh, really?
And when we left, we had Black History Month.
Wow.
And so to hear that you didn't have that, you helped start the gospel choir. It was brotherhood. Yeah. Then when I get to Southview, I sung on the gospel choir. And not just on the gospel choir, man, I remember we would go off to downtown Fayetteville to sing.
Wow.
And we had Black History Month because I was also on the step team.
Okay.
And we stepped in the Black History Month.
Okay.
We even had a Black History Month assembly, you know, where it just come together for 2 years, for 2 hours, and just talk about everything.
Yeah.
So what you are doing is important.
Wow. That's
and thank you.
I think you came along probably with some of my cousins because I think they changed the name of the group. Because we called it the Brotherhood Choir.
No.
But they continued it like years past because I remember going to an event at the lake. Wow. And my cousin was playing the drums, wow, I think, at that time. Wow. And it was still going on. I didn't know the Black History Program was still going on.
Still going.
But it just shows you, like, what we do matters.
It does.
You can change the, just your yes, mm-hmm, can change history for someone else, yes, you know? And we didn't start out, you know, thinking like, we're going to make it better for those coming behind us. Now I think like that.
Right, right, right.
But it was kind of like, no,
I just
we're going to do this.
Yes.
Because this is the right thing to do. This
Facts.
Is fair. And we wanted to learn. We sang the National Negro Anthem.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
we had to learn that.
Yes.
For that. And I know that song today because of that program.
Wow.
You know, yeah, we sung gospel. Yeah, it was good.
Man.
And I didn't know that you, that is so good to hear.
I was in it. My dad made sure I was singing gospel
wow
music.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
Something I want to talk about real quick before we end the show that I think you talk about in your book. And I cannot stress the importance of getting this book, you
yeah
guys. When I first moved to Baltimore, for the first week, I was watching the news. And when I was watching the news, it was about how a Black family uh-huh had their house appraised.
Yeah.
And it came back in $100,000 undervalued.
Yeah. Yeah.
They paid to get another appraisal. Their real estate agent said, all right, take down all of the Black pictures.
Yeah.
Remove anything that represents the Black community. And the realtor had them put up white family pictures.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, are you serious? Literally, this is happening.
Yeah.
It's on
yeah
the news.
Yeah.
And there were several cases of this going
oh, yeah
around the DMV area.
Yeah.
And it was, I was so shocked because they had proven
yeah
documents showing when I had Black faces up, I was $100,000 over. When I put white faces up, we were $60,000 over
yeah
what we thought the house would appraise
yeah
for. And so they sued, I don't want to say the city, but they sued with whoever's
yeah
over that.
Uh-huh.
And my realtor was like, hey man, when you sell this house, take down everything that
yeah
looks Black.
We all know.
And I was like,
yeah,
are you serious right now? He was like, oh no, this is a real deal.
Yeah.
He was like, and unfortunately, don't even be home when
yeah
it comes to do your appraisal.
Yeah.
Don't be. And I was like, are you serious? But in your book, in chapter, I think I saw it in chapter, you have two
yeah
specific chapters in here. Number one,
property the ownership.
Yeah. So
yeah
you, in chapter five, you talk about the Black market, talk about
yeah
the marketplace
yeah
and how we're
yeah
impacted financially, which is great. Then chapter seven, you talk about the land of the broken promises, property ownership.
Yeah. That is...
Why is this happening?
Well, because it's baked into our system. And get, who makes up systems? People.
People.
People make up systems.
Yeah.
So when people have biases against different groups
yes
of people,
yes,
sometimes knowingly and sometimes unconscious and consciously,
mm-hmm,
you know, that... When we, it is the history of redlining,
mm-hmm,
where we've always devalued Black spaces. So there's nothing new. So they're just carrying on the continuation of that marginalization and devaluing Black spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And most of, in those cases where when they change the pictures and where there's not an element that a Black person lives there,
mm-hmm,
their appraisal increase sometimes 100 to 150,000.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge. Like when you think about it, that's another house.
That is.
You know, in some
that
places.
Is.
That is like, I mean, those are the things, those are the landmines, those are the potholes
mm-hmm
that where we're saying that we're all in the same race now.
Mm-hmm.
But in front of us, we have hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
We have potholes.
Mm-hmm.
We have ropes. We have all these other things that we have to
mm-hmm
navigate.
Mm-hmm.
That white people are not even thinking about that when they're selling their house. There are things that we have to think about. And then what we do is we adjust. We're like, okay, this is a part of the system.
Right.
I gotta take the pictures down.
Right.
I gotta, you know, or either challenge it,
yep,
sue, or you know, but if we don't know,
mm-hmm,
and there's people out there that are not educated to know, like, okay, why is my house not valued like this?
Mm-hmm.
So I even think about that, like, when you're selling a car,
mm-hmm.
when you're purchasing a car,
mm-hmm.
you know, just the predatory lending.
Yes.
Like all these things that we can go back through historically to see why where we have the wealth gap. And then when land ownership at the end of the Civil War, the amount of land that we owned at that time, you know, even through enslavement and Reconstruction, but now look at the land ownership.
Yes.
And so because of the U.S. aid, you know, they were very racist.
Yeah.
And so the loans, we weren't able to get loans to save our farms.
Facts.
You know? And so now when we have things that are put in place to repair that wrong, people are saying, well, no, you can't get that because you're black. I'm like, what? Did we forget why we're even here?
Come on.
It's almost laughable.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like you almost have to laugh to keep from crying.
You do.
Where most of us, we're just getting, I mean, our parents were born into a world they couldn't go to any school that they want to. You know, most colleges didn't desegregate until, you know, the 60s, 70s. I talk about a school in there that finally desegregated in Mississippi in 2021.
2021. So my dad went to a segregated school. My aunt was the last one. And I think it was the late 60s, early 70s.
Yes.
That she was able to go to a black and white school.
Most of us are the first ones. I am the first one out of my immediate family, out of my mom and dad, that was able to go to a school that wasn't, you know, segregated. And so when we're saying this, we've just got access to schools, you know, through DEI programs, you know.
Wow.
But DEI wasn't about merit. It was like giving us a space that was rightfully earned.
Yes.
So it's repair.
Yes.
So don't let people trick you into that. Like, so when you think about, we're only in 60 years removed from that.
Mm.
And you think about the impact of these institutions who were not built for us, how long that went on.
Yeah.
And so at that, but what we do is we adjust.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I think it's important that we support each other, that we fund each other. Our strength in our community is unity. That is our superpower.
You know what's so funny is, though, and we're going way over time. Y'all just going to deal with this. When I say something like that, even on this platform, we're going to have white people say, it shouldn't be about black people supporting black people. Like, it shouldn't be. You should be able to support whoever has the product, whoever has the services. And me, I'm like, hey, I love all people. But if there's a white person here and there's a black person here, I want to support the black person because of what we've been through.
And because we don't get the dollars, we don't get the loan dollars. Like, I mean, I run a 501c3. I have a nonprofit organization. We get less than 2% of donated funds. That's why we just think about why we're not successful at a lot of times when it comes to nonprofits, because you have that social capital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was invited, you know, and that's why part of our L's, we say listen, learn, lament, leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So leverage is a part of that, because one of the things we're lacking in our community a lot of times is social capital.
Mm-hmm.
It's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't know a whole bunch of millionaires, I don't know a whole bunch of millionaires like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking to fund my organizations, typically people give to their social circles. People give to people they're in relationship with. So if you're in relationship with, you know, people who look like you majority of the time, then that's who you're going to give your money to.
Yep.
So I was invited to this event by a white donor that's a part of my organization to give me access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would have never had access like that. And so they gave me access. And so that helps broaden my social capital.
Yes, ma'am.
And so, you know, so you have to look at it. It's not so much as, you know, like, a lot of times, like, the mindset of white supremacy thinks that if something is happening for you, that means something is being taken from me. And we do a whole education. We have an academy. We do a whole education on this for white people, and also for people of color to understand that mindset and understand how white identity works. So, like, it should be nothing for you to say, hey, I want to lift up black businesses because I know they've been marginalized.
That's it.
That should be a given, especially Christians.
That should be celebrated.
That should be Christians. I mean, how many parables do we have, you know, that the first should be last, the last should be first? Like, I mean, we can talk about that. So that is kingdom mindset, right? What we're talking about. So we're not talking about anything. And it doesn't mean that I don't support and go into white businesses. I mean, I go to Target all the time.
I was about to say that. You know? We do it every day.
Starbucks.
Right.
So, but if I'm being intentional about some of the other businesses, like I want to be intentional about things that I'm invested in or you know, if someone has a t-shirt business, because I know what that can do. Because we would take a little and make a lot.
Come on.
And what we're doing now is we're building our own tables, brother. This is what you're doing.
We're building our own tables.
It's not that we're saying, hey, invite me, give me a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. We're saying, you know what? You can keep the seat.
Right, right.
I'm going to build a table.
Yes.
And I'm going to invite other people.
Yes, ma'am.
To that. And inviting other people, they can look like me or they don't look like me. I have a mixed staff, you know? Because I know in this work of reconciliation, it's going to take everyone.
Everybody.
It's going to take the indigenous, Asian Americans, white Americans, you know, and African Americans. But we didn't break this. It's not our fault. But it is our collective responsibility to be a part of the solution. And what you're doing is you are a part of that solution, brother. Mm-hmm. You know, what you're doing, you're a part of the solution. So we all play our different parts.
Yeah.
But what the education that you're doing here on your platform, this right here is combating systemic racism.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
So you're doing your part. So you're in the game, but our parts look different.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody else, you're listening, you're like, you know, I don't know all the things that she's talking about. Now, it's important for us to educate ourselves, but you're doing your part, you know, and we don't diminish someone else's story. Like, you know. I know. We could go on.
I got to end with this one question.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of people are watching right now and they have kids.
Yes.
And they're like, okay, I'm reading I'm going to get this book.
Right.
And if you haven't gotten Be the Bridge, you guys, get Be the Bridge too, because I think that's a good foundation.
Yes,
to really start and to really understand, because that book changed my life.
Yeah.
And what I'm excited about is these are the conversations I'm having with my nephews and my niece.
Yes.
I'm reading from you.
That's good.
Getting a better understanding, yes, and then regurgitating it in a more simple way to help,
yes,
them understand who they are and where they've come,
yes,
from.
Yes.
So when they get inside of the school systems, that's not going to teach them who they are and where they came from correctly.
Right.
They know. I'm trying to be careful when having that conversation, because I don't want them to get in trouble for talking back to the teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or asking the question and it comes off combative.
Right.
But As an expert in this space, what do you recommend to parents, and how do you recommend them to have this kind of conversation with their kids so that they are educated,
right,
and they have a better understanding?
Yes.
Because if I was this educated,
yes,
in middle school and in high school, I would be further along in this journey.
Yes.
But I was confused.
Yeah.
And not just confused, can I be real with you? I was upset.
Yeah.
Because I saw that I was being treated differently because of my skin.
Yeah.
But I knew that there was slavery. We, yeah, have to learn that in school.
Yeah.
But I didn't know the context,
yes,
of everything that's going around, because they were teaching, hey, this was years,
yeah,
ago.
Yeah.
There's no more racism. There's no more of this.
Yeah.
So I'm like, from your shoes, how do we set up our kids to win with this information?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. And that's why a part of our organization, we have a youth and college division. And we do that because we want to educate them, because we do a student leadership institute. And the students there, they may know a little bit here and there, but you can't depend on the schools to teach them the historical context.
Facts.
Because I remember growing up, I was ashamed of our history.
Mm.
Because I saw it as something that we were, victimized, That we were docile, like how it was taught to me.
Yes, ma'am.
So that helped, that hurt my identity.
Yep.
You know, that hurt a lot of things. And so we have to really change the narrative and teach it ourselves. But as a parent, if you're not equipped, there's so many books. Start with movies, making sure that when there's movies coming out, historical context, but also movies that show us what we can be.
Absolutely.
Taking your kids to see to movies.
Yes.
Getting your kids mentors.
Yes.
You know, in different, in various spaces. Exposing them. Museums. Every city has a museum.
Every
you know?
City.
And mostly all the cities have some type of African-American museum.
I mean, listen, come to DMV. We got a dope one out
here. Yeah, exactly.
We got a real dope
one. And so taking them to the museum so they can see. And I like how the museum here, the Smithsonian, starts off with, you know, where it started, but also at the
yes.
top, where we've come from.
Yes.
And even what that started from, like, you know, when you think sugar and spices,
yes.
like, you know, human commodity for that type of thing. Like, it's crazy.
Right.
But I think educating your kids the best way you can. And, you know, we have a lot of resources that we come along schools and churches. But I want our community to say, you know, like the Asian American community, when they're there, they really are, they push education hard.
Mm-hmm.
So they start in their churches, SAT prep
mm-hmm.
and things like that when their kids are 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the Jewish community, their kids go to Saturday school learning about their Jewish identity.
They do.
You know?
Yes.
We have churches. That's the one thing we have is churches. And, so, and the thing is, we have to start utilizing our church space
mm-hmm.
to equip and educate our community
yes.
on these things. Yes. And so so I think a part of our mentorship programs, we really have to really start giving kids our historical context.
So
I think it starts with one conversation.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's a book.
Yeah.
That's a movie yeah. that you watch. That's a lesson that you teach. They're the greatest lesson is them watching your life. Your niece and nephew are watching you.
They sure are.
And so, and they're gonna glean from that. But we just can't leave it up to the schools to teach. And you know, I have a friend of mine who she does this thing called woke homeschooling.
Wow.
And she's creating curriculum out there. And, you know, she's teaching, you know.
I need to get her on the show.
Yeah.
Woke
yeah.
homeschooling.
Woke homeschooling. I can
connect
you.
I need to get
you.
Her. Hey, yeah. listen, if you watching this right now, listen, hit me up. I
Delina
need you to come
McMahon,
on here.
You know, and she's been doing this. And she was a part of our Be the Bridge community.
Come on.
Originally. I mean, there's so many people doing amazing things. There's people are starting micro schools now.
Wow.
So they're, you know, so it's like they're starting. We have a very educated community.
Yes, ma'am.
So they're starting micro schools. And we always rise to the top. We're always resilient. I wish we didn't have the quicksand and the potholes and
yes.
the hurdles.
Yeah.
I don't understand why we have to go through those things,
right.
but I do believe in our community, and I think it's really because of our faith.
Yes, ma'am.
You know,
yes,
and God ma'am. Has been with us, and God is still with us.
Yes.
You know, and this is not to cause division, because I think, you know, like a part of that bridge building is, you know, we have white brothers and sisters, Asian brothers and sisters, all of that. We can, it's a both and. It's not an either or. And that's the thing that we have to realize. And so white people in our community, they come alongside.
Yes.
You know, I know people, white people who are doing woke homeschooling.
Listen.
You know?
Listen.
So, yeah, because they want their kids to know and have the context. They don't want their kids to grow up like they did.
Yes.
And not know and understand and not treat people and give people their God-given dignity and keep treat people like they're not the imago Dei. They want their kids to treat everyone like
yes.
they were created in the image of God, too. So
listen, yeah. listen, Latasha, we can go on.
I know.
We're going to maybe bring you back just to be on a quarter, because one thing I really want to do within my brand, which is, I don't know what God is doing with my brand. I turned 40 this year
okay.
in a couple of months, and even how I'm thinking,
yeah,
I'm thinking differently. And one thing I've learned is I can teach people how to get the money right.
Right.
But what I have learned is history was my worst subject. But what I've learned, That should not have been the case.
Yeah.
Because if I understood my history,
yeah,
I could perform better in my present and move differently into my future.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I really want to be big on is just really educating our people on the history, what we're going through, why we're going through that. Because if you understand the why,
yes,
you understand how to maneuver in the present.
Yes.
And so I promise you, we're going to reach out to your team, yeah, even if we just got to do a Zoom call just once a quarter. Yeah. Hey, let's just talk about the history and understand that.
Yeah.
Because as I'm reading and learning more about history, I'm teaching better content when it comes to helping people with their money, because now I understand why I'm teaching that message because of what happened to us in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
You are a blessing to... I wouldn't say you're a blessing to the Black community. I think you're a blessing to the kingdom, because I see what your assignment is and how your assignment is impacting the white community.
Yeah.
I have white friends who become friends because they changed their mindset because of your teaching.
Yeah. I get told that a lot.
I'm so serious. Yeah. I'm like, at first, they were distant, just cool people. Yeah. When I needed them for something, when they needed me for something, we was like, cool. But we didn't really have friendship and conversation.
Yeah.
And then when their churches started reading Be the Bridge and going through the discussions, then they started calling me. Like, one of them literally called me and said, I just want to say I'm sorry. Mm. And I was like, for what, bro? He said, I didn't understand why you were so passionate about the George Floyd. And, and you know, Latasha, I think that as a Black man, that was probably one season of my life where I felt that I wasn't Black.
Wow.
Because on a national platform, I said, as a Black man, this isn't my fight.
Mm. Wow.
And it was because I'm in a predominantly white world.
Yeah.
They're somewhat silent.
Yeah.
I'm going home crying every day.
Yeah.
I'm going home saying, that could have been me. Yeah. That could have been my brother, but I had no one to talk to in my everyday world.
That Will W. E. Du Bois talks about, the double consciousness that we have to do, the duality.
We do.
Yes, of that, you know, carrying that, where we feel like it's an either or, but it's a both and. How are we able to bring ourselves? That's why I wrote, you know, Brown Faces, White Spaces, because how we have to live and adjust and assimilate into white spaces is crushing us.
And they don't have to adjust to us.
Yeah, it's totally different. We're going to make sure, if you're a white person, you're working in one of our churches and schools, it's like, even statistics, we're going to check to make sure you're okay.
Yes.
We're going to make sure your family is, like, we're going to go above and beyond.
And we want you to be you.
Yeah, because, first of all, because we're very hospitable. You know what I'm saying? We love deeply.
Yes.
We love well.
Yes.
You know, we love in spite of, think historically.
Yes.
You know, and so we're going to make sure of that, but the same doesn't happen. It's not reciprocated.
It's not.
On the other side. And so we have to teach that, and we have to learn that. And so I think, you know, with our academy, we have tracks for specifically for white people, and then also for people of color. So, you know, so we can offer, you know, some. I'll talk to the team, because we can offer some discounts just even for our BIPOC community.
We need to.
So that we can help educate, because, like, with the wealth and education that we have,
yes,
if we sometimes understand the context a little bit better,
yes, ma'am,
it does make us teach better. It does make us create better resources and all of that. And that's with me, you know. The more understanding I have about history,
yes,
and also with scripture, I'm a better communicator, because of it.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I'm in seminary now. Wow. And I'm in seminary now because I wanted to really understand theology and the Bible, not just first of all, to help me grow closer to God, but also to write better, and to give people context. Like, there's nothing that we're dealing with now that wasn't dealt with in Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
Historical context, you know, when we start talking about, you know, the Bible talks of ethos. So that's ethnicity.
Yes.
Nations and tribes.
Yes.
So race is a man-made,
yes,
you know, thing. That's something that we done created and baked up,
yes,
here here in America.
Yeah.
But it makes no sense outside of our context. But the Bible speaks to that, you know. From Abraham to Moses to Joseph. Think about Joseph. They didn't. I talk about this story in there. Because it's biblical context. His brothers didn't recognize him. Why? Because he assimilated. He was dressed like an Egyptian.
Yes.
So come think on. About that.
Come on.
For him.
Yes.
But when you look at his son's name, he remembered who he was.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
But he knew he had to adjust in this space because his sons had Hebrew names. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's there. And so that helps me see just like how to navigate the world that we live in when I look at scripture and how it was navigated.
Yes.
You know, so yeah.
No, you're good. You are amazing. And and I want to end this show with saying this to my E3 community and the guests who are watching today. Because I felt this, and you can correct me or say it differently if you want to say it after I say it. I just know how to say it straightforward. Give grace to African Americans who are in predominantly white spaces, yeah, who do not know how to maneuver in that.
Yeah.
Because I went from an all black situation to an all white situation.
Yeah, that's good.
And I was trying to figure out how to be Anthony Bernard O'Neill, who God made, maneuvering in a culture in a space that I've never maneuvered in. And oftentimes, black people called me a sellout. Oftentimes, black people said he's an Oreo, black on the outside, but white on the inside.
Yeah.
And then white people said Anthony's too black. White people said Anthony doesn't fit into our culture. I mean, I've been called, and here's the truth, I lied to blend in.
Yeah.
And then I would hear, you're a liar. Well, I am lying because I don't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it's like we have to give grace to these people because I don't think there's a lot of people who maneuver in that space on a regular. And it wasn't just me going into an office. That was my world for a season.
You were in survival mode.
Absolutely. And in survival mode, you don't make all the right decisions, right?
Yeah.
And so I just felt led to say that. And when we see that in people, just give them grace. Pass them this book. You know, expose them to things because here's the truth. God had me there for a season, and I believe I made an impact in that season during that season. But it feels so good to be out on my own.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave it right there. Ladies and gentlemen, yo, we had the amazing New York Times bestseller, Latasha Morrison, on the show. She's become a dear friend, and we're going to definitely have her back on at least once a quarter just to have just a conversation about history and understanding. I want to beg you to get this book, all right? There's two books this month that Reef recommended. Sarah J's book, The Power Book, and then this book, Brown Faces, White Spaces. And these are two books that I just believe, and it's just amazing how this month we're talking about power moves, right? And brown faces. And if you all watched that show with Sarah, she was talking about the power within us, right?
Yeah.
Moves and how the power within our brown faces can impact the white spaces. That's all I'm gonna
say. I gotta go get power moves.
Hey man, listen, that's all I got to say on that right there. Because we are a reading community. We are a reading community, Latasha. That's one thing I've been very big on, is making sure that we're reading and that we're educating ourselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I believe wealthy people read.
Yeah.
And I have to say this now. Wealthy people understand their history.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to put all of her information in today's show notes, her Instagram, Be The Bridge website, their information, their curriculums. Hopefully she'll give us a discount if y'all want to go over there and do some of their stuff. Please do that. But most importantly, please pick up this book. And like you said, this is our sister, black people. Let's get her another New York Times bestselling book. It's your boy, Anthony O'Neill. We'll see you in the next show. Peace out.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.